here to discuss the big stories of the week and those that we wish hadn't been so big. Danny Schechter, blogger-in-chief at newsdissected.org and the author of Plunder, Investigating Our Economic Calamity. Andrew Tindall, editor-in-chief of the Tindall Report. Also with us, Eleanor Tatum, editor-in-chief and publisher of the Amsterdam News here in New York. And joining us by Skype, Ali Abu Nima, co-founder of electronicintifada.org and author of One Country, A Bold Proposal to End the Israeli-Palestinian Impasse. All right, well, let's start. Not an easy week, really, to take apart the media coverage because there's been, well, frankly, there's been so much to say about so many stories on so many different fronts. Andrew, you're the one that actually brings us the statistics, the numbers. Your report, your reporting this week actually showed that there'd been a good amount of coverage from Gaza, but what about the quality of it?
Well, yeah, on the amount, first of all, the most instructive way to compare it is to compare it with what happened 2.5 years ago when there was a very similar conflict only on Israel's northern border between Israel and Hezbollah. Back then, 2.5 years ago, all of the major broadcast news anchors went to the region. They went to Haifa, they went to Jerusalem, they went along the border to report from the action itself. So this year, even though all the networks have deployed correspondents along the Gaza border, and in fact it was the number one most heavily covered story last week on the network news, this year all the anchors have stayed at home. So it's obviously not being treated with the seriousness of the conflict.
How important is it that the anchor goes, Danny, to you?
Well, beyond that, CBS, it's been reported, pulled out all of its reporters from Israel right before this whole conflict started. You know, they're subcontracting out their coverage of Iraq to the BBC. It seems as if network news, for the most part, is giving up on covering the world. And where they have been covering the world and Gaza, they tend to be doing it from the side of the Israelis, of people whose homes have been rocketed, going back into their shelters, back and forth, showing a family, in distress, clear distress because of rocket attacks, but no commensurate coverage coming from inside Gaza. On the other hand, Al Jazeera and Iran's Press TV do have correspondents in Gaza.
But isn't that largely, Ali Abu Nima, to you, because the Israelis have actually kept the media out of Gaza? And the fact is, they haven't just started doing that now. They've been doing that for months. Is it working?
Well, yes, it is working. By closing the border to journalists going into Gaza, one of the reason Israel is able to do that is because the Western reporters don't take Gaza seriously anyway. All their reporters are based in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. So all they have to do is shut the border and no one can see what's going on in Gaza. But the fact that Al Jazeera is there and they stream free in English on the internet is an important way for people in this country to see what hundreds of millions of people in the Arab world are seeing and what is causing unprecedented outrage and grief and anguish at the massacres that are going on in the Gaza Strip.
To you, Eleanor, you said before the show that you'd actually been in Sderot, the Israeli town.
I was there actually exactly a year ago. I was there the first week in January last year. And while we were there, actually, a Qassam did hit about 30 seconds past where we had just been. But, you know, when I'm listening to the fact that the coverage, the network anchors aren't there and whatnot, it's all economic. You know, the American media has pulled back so much in terms of doing international coverage because the dollars are not just there. And having a correspondent there is much cheaper than having an anchor because of the level of comfort that an anchor gets versus a correspondent.
Well, maybe it's a good thing. I mean, if they had sent the anchors, we'd be here trashing their coverage. Probably they're not the most informed people necessarily
on this particular topic. What's wrong with having stringers?
Well, I think it's actually a good thing. I think it is because they actually, if they're there all the time on the ground, they've got better context. They know more about what's going on in the area.
But maybe it's better that we look to other media altogether.
The point about getting one's video nowadays online as opposed to on television is a really important point, and that's the future of video journalism. But to your point, it's not so much that the coverage is better when the anchors are on the scene. What it does, though, is it shows to the viewer at home, this is a story that we, the network, consider to be an A number one story rather than a B story or a C story. All the anchors are going to be there on January the 20th for the inauguration. For them, that's the big story of January, is Obama's coming to town. It's not what's happening in Gaza.
Let's go back to Ali Abu Nima for a sec. Ali.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the anchors being there would make much difference. I think their failure to report the facts on the story, and this goes both for the television and the print media, is astounding. They repeat the Israeli government talking points about rockets coming in Israel. Well, I'm looking right here on my desk at a Human Rights Watch report that says that from May 2007, in the year up to May 2007, excuse me, Israel launched 14,600 artillery shells, 155-millimeter artillery shells at the Gaza Strip. Israel is complaining about 6,000 rockets in 8 years, and this is supposed to be a dramatic number. But when you do the math, these rockets carry a low explosive of about 1 pound. You add it together, you get about 12 tons of low explosive launched by the Palestinians in 8 years. Compare that to 100 tons of military high explosive dropped on the Gaza Strip in the first day on December 27th of this attack. And that's your explanation for why 700 Palestinians, the vast majority of them civilians, have been killed in the past 10 days. And that's your explanation why fewer than 10 Israelis have been killed ever since the first rocket was ever fired on Israel. And then, of course, there's the little matter of the fact that Israel broke the ceasefire first, not being reported or mentioned anywhere.
Well, let's talk about the history. As you've brought us to the history, Ali, let's talk about where, how this timeline has been set out by the media. Andrew, do you want to start on that? I mean, do you think that we've gotten an accurate idea of how, what the roots of this problem are?
I would state this principle. The closer the reporter is to the scene, the more detail and more accuracy and the fewer talking points actually get made. So, for instance, the clearest report that I've heard, ironically from a CBS reporter, since you were complaining about CBS, Danny, was from a long-time guy who's now, Mark Phillips, is now based in London, but who was sent back there as soon as the action started. So he knows the rules of the game. And he said quite clearly the two sides of the conflict between Israel and the government of Hamas, one is that Israel wants the rockets to stop, and Hamas wants the blockade to stop. Now, that's a very different way of framing it than we have to fight terrorism because these rockets are intimidating our civilians. The Hamas government has got a complaint. It's not even an equal complaint. It's a greater complaint, which is our population is being blockaded.
But we
and
have
that's
seen
the CBS reporter who said that.
But we have seen repeatedly this implication, not really an implication, but an assertion that the reason this conflict has begun is because Hamas violated a ceasefire. The Washington Post editorialized to that effect boldly on the 28th of December, announcing that Hamas invited the conflict by ending a six-month-old ceasefire. USA Today said something very similar. NBC Nightly News, very similar. It's important where you begin the clock.
The CNN experts,
that's the weapons of
military
mass destruction lie
said
of
pretty
this
much
conflict.
The same thing. I mean, it's just all about narrative. It's all about how do you explain what's going on? How much context do you reference? How much background do you offer the audience? In an environment like the one we have on television today, there's no airtime for any of that. It's all the now. It's all what's happening right this second.
Danny, they don't need a lot of airtime to say the Hamas wants the blockade ended.
And the blockade's been in effect for 18 months.
And they do claim
to
go back.
To come
they're
back
perfectly happy to put forward the Israeli claim that there's been 8 years of rockets. They don't talk about 8 years of massive bombardment of the Gaza Strip. They don't talk about the fact that from the 1st of January till June 2008, 600 Palestinians had been killed in the Gaza Strip. So we're not talking about going back years and years. But the other point that I think is absolutely crucial to make is that the information is there. You can get it. There are UN officials giving this. You can get it from independent human rights groups. They're not going and looking for the information. And time again, I'm hearing these talking points about thousands and thousands of Hamas rockets. And it's like the same claims of weapons of mass destruction that in Iraq. The rockets play the same role in this narrative. The rockets are not the real story, but it's what the media keep focusing on.
If the media were all doing their job, they would actually have people in Gaza that are there on a permanent basis, that are people that are Palestinian, that are reporters, because there are reporters that are Palestinian. And the fact that we do not have people in there doing that kind of work, I think, is the major problem of all of it.